Welcome. Thank you for joining our monthly Conscious Dating Teleseminar. The seminar series is designed to help you find the love of your life and the life that you love. So please mark your calendar and be sure to join us on the first Thursday of each month for outstanding, one-of-a-kind programs you won't want to miss. Our topic tonight is Conscious Dating Strategies, Where to Meet Your Soulmate. And if you don't have the outline of tonight's call, it is available in a PDF format, and you can go to www.consciousdatingseminar.com and print off a copy. The outline will make it much easier for you to follow along and take note. I'm Frankie Dorn, the president of Conscious Relationship Network, and my co-presenter is David Steele, who's the founder of Relationship Coaching Institute and the author of Conscious Dating, Finding the Love of Your Life in Today's World. Our mission is to do everything in our power to help you find your life partner. For example, on the third Thursday of each month, we conduct a free monthly Conscious Dating teleclinic to provide real-time coaching and relationship advice. For more information about the teleclinic, you can go to www.consciousdatingteleclinic.com. Tonight, David Steele and I are joined by our special guest and radio host, RCI coach Jack Cook. Welcome, Jack.
Well, thank you very much.
Today, we are going to talk with you about where to meet your soulmate. And you will learn that your attitude makes or breaks your potential for success no matter where you look for a partner. You will learn five key principles that will help you find your soulmate. You will learn about our four levels of attraction venues and why you need to show up in all four of them to maximize your chances of meeting your soulmate, and the specific social and dating skills that you need for each level of attraction venue, how to effectively apply the rule of three to engage and connect with a potential date. Now, if you've ever wondered, how do I introduce myself or how do I meet somebody that I'm attracted to, you will definitely want to know about the rule of three. And you will learn tonight why flirting skills are an essential part of every singles toolkit and a lot more, because we have three hosts and presenters tonight. Between Frankie, Jack, and myself, I think we're going to fill up the time. So we're recording this program, and if you'd like to order the MP3 and the transcript of tonight's program, please go to www.consciousdatingaudio.com. That's consciousdatingaudio.com. And if you go there, if you would just like this program, that's fine. We have a special deal for you. For a great price, you can order all of the Conscious Dating seminars we've done for this year as a package deal. So you might want to check that out, www.consciousdatingaudio.com. So tonight we're going to talk to you for about an hour, and we'll have a question and answer session, and we'll probably go over. We want to be able to answer your questions. We want to know what's on your mind. We will definitely be prepared to go over, especially since we're starting late. I'm going to kick us off by talking about the attitude piece, about why your attitude has such an impact on your dating and your chances of success of finding your soulmate. As far as I am concerned, as far as my research and experience goes, attitude precedes outcome. Just like what you can believe you can achieve, your attitude is everything. And what is your attitude? Your attitudes are the thoughts that go on in your head, the beliefs that you have, the frame of reference that you have. It's where you're coming from. And there is such a thing as the law of attraction, and the law of attraction can help you or get in the way. And your attitude needs to be aligned with what it is you want, so the law of attraction can bring it to you. Any interfering attitudes will get in the way, will prevent you from being successful. This is just really, really important, and I just can't stress it enough. It's the single most important skill to be able to monitor your own attitudes, to be able to adjust your own attitudes. And believe it or not, you can. You know, having a certain attitude like, oh, all the good ones are taken, or all men are jerks, or it'll never happen for me, or older men just want younger women, or, you know, whatever your attitude is, you have the ability to change it. You have a choice. You are not stuck with an attitude simply because it's, you know, bouncing around in your head. You can identify the attitudes that don't serve you and change them. So what are examples of positive, productive, effective relationship attitudes for singles? I have a list for you. I have my top 10 relationship attitudes for singles, and I'd like to share them with you right now. Number one is, I am going to be happy by having goals and letting go of attachment to outcomes. So, in my opinion, happiness comes from knowing what you want, going after what you want, but not being so attached to the specifics that you're not happy along the way and you're not willing to accept what comes your way, because there is a certain amount of going with the flow that needs to happen. So you can't be too rigid. You can't resist what happens. You have to be able to accept and appreciate, you know, what is. So I will be happy by having goals and letting go of attachment to outcomes. Attitude number two, I live in the present. This is very important because relationships and connection happen in the present. Happiness and fulfillment happens in the present. Opportunities that come your way, if it's an attractive, you know, man or woman, that's going to be in the present. If you're in your head in the past or in the future, then you're not going to pay attention to the opportunities that come your way. You'll miss out on them, and you won't have the ability to be happy, fulfilled, or make a connection in a relationship. So I live in the present. Attitude number three, I love, accept, and trust myself. Now, this is the part where, you know, how can you love somebody else if you don't love yourself? Well, this is where it comes in, because your attitude towards yourself, you know, our relationships are mirrors. So your attitude towards yourself will come out in your relationships, and that will be mirrored by your relationship. So I love, accept, and trust myself is an important attitude, a important place for you to come from so that you can have a loving and positive relationship. Attitude number four, I focus on connection, not results. A partner is someone to love, not an object or a goal. And this can be hard for some singles when you're looking through personal ads or you're scoping people out at a singles dance. You know, you're looking at how they look, at their packaging, and are they attractive? And you're looking at the outside. But, you know, these are human beings. And we need to, if we want to have successful relationships, we need to be able to focus on connection. Not, you know, are you the one for me or not? Well, is this the one? No. Is this the one? No. Okay, get out of the way if you're not the one. Is this the one? No. You know, a partner is someone to love, not an object or a goal. It's not like there's an empty slot next to you that you just want to fill it, you know, with somebody qualified. You know, you want a human being in your life that you can love and be loved by, and it's about connection, not results. Number five, I am authentic, being fully honest with myself and others, aligning my words, values, and actions. So this is the attitude where you are fully who you are, and you are telling your truth to yourself and to other people. You are acting your truth. You're aligning your words with your values and your actions. You're living authentically. You have the attitude of authenticity. And attitude number six, I live my life with intentionality, making choices conscious of my goals and their consequences. Intentionality to me means that the choices you make with full intention of those consequences. You know that if you make choice A, consequence B or C is likely to happen. So you live your life with intentionality. You are conscious of your choices and the consequences of your choices. It's a very, very important attitude to take responsibility for your choices and to be aware of the consequences of your choices. Attitude number seven, I take the necessary risks to overcome my fears, stretch my comfort level to reach my goals. It's an attitude of stretching and risk-taking. No one is successful by staying in their comfort level. Think about it. No one is successful by staying in their comfort level. If you want to be happy and successful in your life, you're going to have to take some risk. You're going to have to stretch. You're going to have to do some things that are uncomfortable for you at times. So it's a necessary attitude to embrace that. Attitude number 8, I assume abundance. All the opportunities and resources that I need will appear. It's trusting the universe. It's trusting yourself that you can take care of yourself. You can be creative when you need to. You can find all the resources and tools and strategies and information you need when you need it. So you assume abundance. You don't have to worry. If you need the money, you can find the money. You can make the money. If you don't want to be alone on New Year's Eve, you can find a date. So you assume abundance. All the opportunities and resources that you need will appear. And if you have the attitude of being present, then you're paying attention when they do appear. It's amazing how often opportunities come your way and you don't spot them. They just pass you by because you're not paying attention. So attitude number 9, I take responsibility for my outcomes by taking initiative in my life and relationships. This is the attitude of ownership, that I take ownership for my life and my outcomes and my relationships. If something isn't going the way I don't like, I don't blame anybody or anything else. I take personal responsibility for that and do something about it. I take initiative. I take responsibility. Very necessary attitude. The last attitude in my top 10 relationship attitudes is what others judge about me is about them. I let go of what others think and do not take it personally. And in my mind, this is crucial to being authentic. You're not going to allow yourself to be authentic if you're worried about what other people think about you. And really, this is not grade school anymore. In grade school, you know how we were worried about being different and we were taunted and teased for being different. Well, we're adults now, and we celebrate differences. We accept differences. We even pay people big money because they're different and special and can do things that other people can't do. So differences are good. And if somebody judges you as different or less than or in a way you don't like, don't worry about it because it's about them. That is absolutely not about you. Let go of what they think. Do not take it personally. It is about them. So as you're dating and as we're going over the attraction venues and where to meet your soulmate, please keep these attitudes in mind because without these attitudes, if you have any interfering attitudes, your dating won't work. And you can meet the perfect guy or perfect gal and not see him or not connect with them, or if you do connect with them, it won't work anyway. So attitude is everything. Attitude precedes outcome.
Yeah, those are really great points, David. Thank you. Well, Jack, that's a great segue into your 5 points of clarity that you believe every single needs to be aware of. Would you like to share those with us?
I certainly would. You know, clarity is important because it keeps a person's objective in focus and kind of foremost in their mind. Before you start out to search for a soulmate, you need to be sure that you have clarity in these 5 areas. So number 1 would be a clarity of vision. Being real clear what the characteristics are that you're looking for in your soulmate. As an example, we know that a requirement is something that it's a deal-breaker type thing, and it might be for a person that no druggers allowed, no drugs in the relationship. Next might be a need, something that if it happened or didn't happen, it would cause an issue in the relationship, and that could be something like steady income. And, of course, then there's the want part of the vision, what you're looking for, and that shows up generally in something that's a lot of fun. It could be something as simple as, not simple to me, but the grilled steak on the grill twice a week. You know, I'm a real person. Number 2, clarity of intention. You've got to remain focused on your vision. You've done some work. You've created a vision. Don't get sidetracked. Don't be dissuaded because you run into something else that might kind of look good to you at the moment. Number 3 is clarity of attraction. A lot going on right now about the law of attraction, and as long as you have no doubt that your soulmate will show up for you, guess what? He or she will. Clarity of patience. Release any hard energy or attachment that you might have to an outcome. Be the chooser. Adopt a chooser perspective. Make sure that you're exercising all of your options and you're being true to yourself, and that'll help you remain patient. And the final one is clarity of awareness. you know, you've got to be open and ready to find who you're looking for at just about any time in any place.
Well, thank you, Jack. I think what you and David are both saying is pretty clear, that a positive attitude and perspective are incredibly important as you embark on your quest for a life partner. But in addition, singles really need to take the time to prepare for the love of their life. And if they are to find a successful match, they have to be ready, and it's really a precursor to attracting a compatible partner. Because being ready means that you're aware. And when you're aware, you can make choices that are in alignment with your goals, and you can take the necessary actions to achieve those goals. And as Jack said, clarity will keep your objectives top of mind. Now, in previous teleseminars, we have discussed the importance of self-assessment in ascertaining your life vision, your goals, your values, your requirements, and your needs. And these really are foundational elements of getting ready, because once you understand what you want, it's so much easier to plot out a path of how you're going to get there. So in many ways, readiness is really the roadmap to finding love, because it provides guideposts along the way that can help you stay on the path that you've set for yourself. And so once you're ready to attract your life partner, there's another set of skills that you need to acquire, and really you need to master these skills, and they're relationship skills. And the good news is that they can be taught and learned. And basically, there are three levels of relationship skills. The first, or the base level, is social effectiveness skills. And these are skills that really apply to everyone. Some examples are initiating contact and self-introduction and just making conversation and eye contact. And these are skills that are appropriate for any type of social setting. The next set of relationship skills are dating skills. And these are specific to singles who are in the process of seeking a partner. So some examples of these skills would be keeping sexual boundaries, flirting, being the chooser, maintaining mystery and not revealing everything in the first meeting, communicating expectations, that type of thing. And then the final level of relationship skills are intimacy skills. And these are specific to having an intimate relationship. So some examples of these might be being able to express appreciation and gratitude, being tolerant and non-judgmental, being emotionally available, forgiving, and deep listening. That type of skill is really important to sustain and build a relationship. So the higher your level of proficiency with these relationship skills, the greater the likelihood of you attracting your love match. And why? Well, because with proficiency comes confidence, and being confident and calm and comfortable in social and dating settings will make you very attractive to a potential partner. But you have to be aware that knowledge of these skills is very different from actually having the skill. And understanding this principle is quite important, because achieving proficiency in social and dating skills does require practice. Now, I'd like to ask you to bear with me for a second, and I'd like to do a quick experiment to illustrate the difference between knowledge and skill. And I'm going to ask you to just grab a pen and paper, and I want you to draw something. But before I ask you to draw this, I'm going to ask you not to look at your computer keyboard. In other words, don't cheat, okay? So I'd like you to draw an ampersand sign from memory. And in case anyone isn't familiar with this, it's often called the and sign. So just take a moment, try and draw the ampersand sign without any help from your keyboard.
Oh, man, mine looks like an 8. I know that doesn't look right.
If you had trouble drawing the ampersand sign, don't worry, because most people do have difficulty drawing the sign without some sample to copy from. But what this illustrates is an important point. Knowing and recognizing the ampersand sign equates to knowledge. And most of us recognize what it is. If we saw it, we could say, hey, that's an ampersand sign.
Oh, sure.
But, right? But being able to draw it, okay, to reliably reproduce it, that equates to skill. And they're two different things. So knowledge comes from observation and other sensory input, but skill is generally only acquired from experience, practice, and trial and error. So what this exercise emphasizes is that we can know very intimately, but still be incapable of reproducing it properly and expertly. you know, whether it's a printed symbol, like an ampersand, or something more significant. And the principle extends to behavior, to style, to techniques, and a lot of things. And so this demonstrates the significance of practice in becoming good at something, because the brain must learn how to do it, which is quite different from the brain simply recognizing something and being able to describe it. So if any of your relationship skills need improvement, especially the social and dating skills, go, and my advice is very strongly, go and get the help you need and practice, 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 because that's going to make you proficient. And we're going to come back to the relationship skills in a few minutes, but let's talk about where to find your soulmate, because David has identified at different attraction venues, and these are places where you can scout and sort your potential partners. So we'll come back to the relationship skills you need in each of those venues, but David, do you want to just provide us with a brief overview of those four levels?
Okay, thanks, Frankie. And by the way, thanks for that experiment. That was brilliant. It really does illustrate the difference between, you know, knowledge and skill. And
yeah,
I certainly have the knowledge, and I found out I do not have the skill. I cannot draw an ampersand. So I identify four levels of attraction venues. An attraction venue is where to find your life partner. These are where you meet people. And who you meet is going to be determined by where you're looking. Right? Does that make sense? And so here's four levels of attraction venues, starting with level one, just public places. The supermarket, the post office, the grocery store, the coffee shop. Anybody could be there, young, old, men, women, you know, single, married. So the likelihood of finding your life partner in public places, you know, even though you might be scouting there and scoping out people that look attractive to you, is the likelihood is actually pretty low. But it's possible. So those are level one venues, public places. Level two venues are generic single settings. This is the personal ads, the singles dances and matchmaking clubs, the singles events. All you know about these people is that they're single. And oftentimes in today's world, you don't even really know that. And just because somebody's single doesn't mean that they're aligned with your vision, who you are, what you want, you know, your requirements, needs, and wants. But it does narrow the field a bit. I mean, you know, certainly more qualified than a public place. So level two venues, generic single settings. Especially things like, you know, internet dating qualifies as this. Level three attraction venues are special interest settings. This is like the ski club, the bike club, the yoga class. This is where you have a strong interest in common with everybody there. And this is a setting that you'd be hanging out anyway because it's fun for you. These are your people. You like hanging out with them. You like sharing time with them because you like to do the same thing that they do and vice versa. This is a great setting to make friends. And since most people still, even in today's world, meet their soulmate through somebody they already know, then making friends is a good goal to have. So level three settings are great for meeting people that are more aligned with you and what you like to do, and great settings for making friends and for meeting people to date. So we're really getting warm now. Level three settings, better than public places, better than generic single settings. Level four settings, I call them communities. These are settings that you don't just share an interest, but you share values, background, a passion, a lifestyle. Church communities and their social activist communities, and they seem to be divided into spiritual type communities or communities that want to make a difference in the world, like, you know, in environmental activist groups and things like that. The thing about communities is that typically they have young and old, it's intergenerational, and the older folks look out after the younger folks, they help each other out, the younger folks help the older folks. Communities tend to be mutually supportive. And if you're a member of a community and they know that you're single and you let them know that you're looking, they tend to want to help you out. They tend to take care of you because you're one of them. And we really need community in our life. We've lost touch with the need for community because we live in a very mobile society. Very few people live and work where they grew up. And in the old days, you know, community was built in. We pretty much were born into and grew up in and stayed in the communities in which we were born to. And now it's rare that people do. So we need to create our own community when we're adults. But if we don't know that we need community, then we're not going to do that. And you might wonder, well, how do you do that? And there's many ways to do that, and hopefully we'll talk more about this. But this is the overview of the four levels of attraction venues. Level one, public settings. Level two, generic single settings. Level three, special interest settings. Level four, communities. And finding your life partner, finding your soulmate, somebody that's highly aligned with who you are and what you want and what you're looking for, the higher you go in the levels of attraction venues, the more aligned you're going to find. So we emphasize developing and hanging out in level three and level four settings. And if you take a look at how you spend your time and where you do your scouting, if all you're doing is going to singles dances and scoping through personal ads, then that's a level two setting. Certainly you can meet people that way, but it's hard to find people that are really highly aligned with who you are and what you're looking for. Jack, you want to talk about the attraction plan?
You know, David, I was listening to that, and I'm afraid that someone might get the idea that levels 1, 2, 3, and 4 are sort of linear in scope, and they're not. They're part of your attraction plan, and they're all at work at all times. You're going to be in these different places any given time during a week or a day or a month or whatever. So you have to kind of think of all this that you're doing in the context of networking. If a person were going out to look for the ideal job, they'd take every kind of an opportunity to network, to be where you need to be seen, where you can make effective contacts. And the same principles that you would use to find the ideal job apply here as you find your soulmate. So you really do need to kind of cast your net, so to speak, far and wide, and that includes increasing your social network, what we talked about earlier about having friends, etc. Since most singles find their partner through their family or their friends, it's extremely important to make friends, especially at the level 3 and the level 4 attraction venues. The people that you meet there are more likely to share the interests and the values that you have, and it's probable that their friends and their family will also. So I think it's really significant to remember that once you are attuned to finding your soulmate, you put everything in place, you're moving forward, just remember, everywhere you go, everything you do becomes an attraction venue.
Exactly, Jack. Because no matter where you go, you bring yourself, right?
Yeah.
And if you're focused and you're dialed into attracting your partner, you will become a magnet. And you'll be paying attention to what's going on in your life and around you. And so you'll start to recognize the opportunities. Now, we talked earlier about taking a look at the relationship skills that you need for each attraction venue. And there is some overlap, but when you acquire a high degree of proficiency through practice, you will gain some confidence, and then you're going to increase your chances of meeting someone special because you're going to be comfortable. Now, I happened to meet my husband on a plane to Amsterdam, and that is definitely a level one, you know, attraction venue. So you just never know how a chance meeting at any level, you know, might change your life. So it's really important to be aware of and apply the relationship skills that are effective for each setting. So as David discussed, level one venues are public places, you know, coffee shop, supermarket, even a plane. And think of level one settings almost like fishing in an ocean. You know, you can cast your line out into the water, but the likelihood of catching a fish is pretty slim. But remember, it's not so much about catching as it is about the practice of casting your line. And that's where level one venues are really a great place to practice your social and dating skills. Because think about it, you don't know these people, you're likely not to see them again, so what have you got to lose? You know, if you practice on your friend's sister or brother and you bombed, you might never live it down. You know, they'll always say, oh, that's the person who tried to flirt with Joe and what a disaster that was. They'll be talking about it for the next 20 years. But you can flirt with a stranger at a coffee shop, and no one's ever going to know about it. And what you take away from that and what you learn about it, that's what's important. And, of course, the practices is extremely important. And what I like in the public setting is it's pretty anonymous. And we're always out there. You know, we're going grocery shopping. We're going to the post office. We're getting a coffee. So you can get in a lot of really great practice time just living your life. And so if you think of practicing in level one venues as an apprenticeship, then when you go to level three or four, you've got a smaller pond and it's a more qualified pond of prospect. By then, you may have mastered some of the skills that you need that are going to come in really handy when you actually meet someone who's got the potential to be your life partner. So some of these social skills that you can practice in level one are being aware of the opportunities. And, you know, that's about initiating contact, seeing someone in a coffee shop or grocery store that, you know, grocery store, maybe they don't know how to pick a melon, and you just go up and you just chat them up. There's no worry about the outcome. There's no expectation about the outcome. It's just about practicing engaging people and initiating the contact. Another social skill is just seizing the moment, you know, taking the action now and not procrastinating until the opportunity has passed you by. And with enough practice and seizing the opportunity, first recognizing it and then seizing it, you know, you won't feel frightened or shy or even hesitant. And then another skill for level one is just making conversation. And that means you can practice just being you, you know, easily and comfortably engaging perfect strangers in very brief and pleasant conversations. Again, no expectation of the outcome. I want to share with you something that happened to me the other day, and I thought it was very funny in hindsight and even at the moment. But I was in line at the grocery store, and the man in line behind me was uncomfortably close, you know, so much so that I was affronted, you know. I was thinking, hey, well, I only allow my husband to get that close to me. You know, who does this guy think he is? And every time I moved, you know, further away from him, he just sidled up right beside me. And I was looking at him, and he was totally oblivious of my looks. And as I checked out, he was still about an inch away from me. And when I paid the cashier, I turned my head to him, you know, looked him straight in the eye, and I said, and will you be coming home with me too? And the guy was so caught off guard that he stuttered, and he said, oh, no, thank you. You know, but he had a big smile on. He was totally unaware that he was being inappropriate. And I looked at the cashier. She got it, and she was giggling. And back at him, and he was smiling. He had this huge smile on his face. And as I left, he said, goodbye, you know, have a lovely evening. I know he went home and he said to his wife, you know, this woman tried to pick me up in the supermarket. And I didn't. I mean, you know, it was just, but I had a choice. I could have been rude to him. I could have scowled at him. Or I could have had fun. And you know what? I chose to have some lighthearted fun. And so it was great. You know, it was no big deal. So these are some of the, you know, certainly don't have to do what I did, but it's just don't take things so seriously. You know, you're just being you and just expressing who you are, and the more practice, the better. So a couple of other social skills, flirting. You know, it's just having a bit of fun. It's universal, and it's really an essential aspect of human interaction. And like every other human activity, flirting is governed by a complex set of unwritten laws of etiquette. And these rules dictate where, when, with whom, and in what manner we flirt. And we generally obey these unofficial laws instinctively without really being conscious that we're doing so. And the only time we really become aware of the rules is when someone commits a breach of the etiquette. And an example might be, you know, flirting with the wrong person or maybe at an inappropriate time or place. You know, for example, if someone was chatting up a widow at her husband's funeral and flirting with her, like that would be extremely inappropriate. And it would incur a lot of disapproval, if not, you know, some anger. So that's a very obvious example. But the more complex and subtle aspects of flirting etiquette can be very confusing. And most of us have made some, you know, a few embarrassing mistakes. But this is really an important part of social skills and dating skills, that where we're showing interest in the opposite sex. Or same sex, research shows that men find it particularly difficult to interpret the more subtle clues in women's body language, and they tend to mistake friendliness for sexual interest. So guys, you really need to hone up your flirting skills and pay attention to signals and body language, that type of thing. Because if you don't, you know, you can get into trouble. And especially here in North America and even Britain, flirting has acquired a bad name because some people have become so worried about causing offense or sending the wrong signal that they're in danger of losing, you know, the natural talent for playful, harmless flirtation. And level one and two venues provide us with a great opportunity to practice harmless flirting. So there's a lot of information out there about flirting, and I strongly recommend that, you know, you improve your proficiency in that skill. So, David, before Jack talks about level two and the skills that are required, would you like to talk about the rule of three?
Sure. The rule of three is my favorite strategy for meeting somebody that you might like to meet, that you might be attracted to. And certainly flirting can be part of it, but the rule of three dictates that it takes at least three contacts to build up some sort of comfort level on both sides to determine if there's any mutual interest and there's any possibility here to, you know, move forward. So, you know, the guy hitting up the girl in the bar, you know, hey, baby, what's your sign? You want to go to my place? That is not the rule of three, because, you know, there's no interchange happening. There's no comfort level built yet. So here's how the rule of three works. Let's say you're attracted to somebody, like the teller at the bank. And so you're in line, and you notice the teller at the bank, and you go up to their window, and, I wonder if they're single. Oh, they're really cute. So you go ahead and be friendly and flirt if you want to and introduce yourself. You know, hey, I'm David. What's your name? Oh, you know, Sally. Very nice to meet you. And, you know, share a little something about yourself. Make small talk, you know, about the weather, whatever. This is normal social behavior, you know, can happen anywhere with, you know, the grocery checker, with somebody waiting at the bus stop. Absolutely harmless. But your goal for the first contact in the rule of three is to disengage having left a positive impression. You want this person to remember you in a positive way. You want to make a positive connection. That is the goal. And all you got to do is be friendly. Just be socially appropriate and friendly and smile and introduce yourself and use their name and say your name and then leave. Disengaging is an important part of it because you want to come back for engagement number two. And in engagement number two, you're going to renew the acquaintance. You've already met. You already know their name. They already know your name. They might have forgotten, but you can remind them. You know, oh, hi, Sally. Remember me? David. And so it's like your old friends. It's a reunion. And continue to chat. Could be small talk, but this time you want to reveal something that's a little bit more personal and a little bit more real about you. So I might say, oh, you know what? It's almost 3 o'clock. I got to go pick up my twin boys from school. And so I've revealed to Sally that I have twin boys. And so I wonder what Sally's reaction might be when I share that information. And maybe she'll be positive. Oh, twins. Oh, you're so lucky. You know, or she might not be paying attention at all. But generally, when you reveal something about yourself, pay close attention to the reaction you get. It'll give you all the information that you need about this person, typically. And then, now that I've shared that I have kids, it is socially appropriate for me then to inquire about Sally. So I say, hey, Sally, you got any kids? Now, if I were to walk up to Sally, you know, and be attracted to her, and one of the first questions I were to ask was, hey, you got kids? That would be inappropriate. However, now that we've schmoozed a bit and now that I reveal that I have kids, I'm not giving Sally the third degree. I'm simply following up and making small talk. I've shared that I have kids, and I ask her, oh, hey, you got kids? And so I learn a little bit more about Sally. I learn something real about her. And then the goal of interaction number two is the same. It's to disengage having left a positive impression. This time, though, having learned something more real about this person and having them learn something more real about me. And then the third interaction. Now, if you're at a bank, this could be like a couple days later or a week later. This also works at a party or a dance or, you know, any event where you might space it out by 10 minutes or 20 minutes or half an hour. The important thing is that each interaction be no more than 5 minutes or so, and that you disengage if you need to. Find an excuse, like, well, I'm going to go get some punch. Can I get you some? Or, I see a friend. I'll catch you later. And don't be afraid to disengage. You must be able to disengage because you want this person to integrate and assimilate the experience that they had of you. You don't want to corner them and talk all night or try to talk all night and share life stories with them because maybe that's not what they want to do. And even if they wanted to, it wouldn't allow you to disengage and have the experience, be able to really think, what was it like with this person? What was the reaction I was getting? You know, checking out my first impressions with the reality, what's that like? It's very important to, you know, be able to think about it and integrate your experience of this person. So with the third interaction, this is where it's like a reunion of old friends. And you've met twice before, you've chatted, you know each other's names, you've had small talk, you've shared something real. It's like a reunion of old friends. Typically, even if it's a distracted teller at the bank, they will remember you by this time, and you will continue to make small talk. You'll continue to reveal something more personal about you. You continue to ask this person, you know, some innocent questions about them. And at some point, it could be in the third interaction, or you can continue to keep it going a little while longer. But at some point, it's time to take a risk. It's time to put yourself out there. You have practiced the rule of three. You have built a comfort level with this person, and they with you. And it's time to determine if there's any interest in anything else. And so you might ask them, hey, you know, I really enjoy talking with you. I wonder if you'd be interested and available to get together sometime. And you can decide what your strategy might be. You might give them your card and you say, here's my card, this is my email address. You know, give me a call or email if you're interested. That's a safe way of doing it. You're not asking for an answer right away. Or you can ask to exchange cards. You know, could I have your email address? Or you can ask for an answer. Would you be interested and available? And I like the question. Interested is one part of the question. Available is another part of the question. And that's the time for them to say, well, I'm married or I have a boyfriend or, you know, something like that. But if they're interested and available, then they'll say, yeah, sure. Hey, I get off at 5. And this is important. You cannot be afraid to take a risk. Remember we were talking about the top 10 relationship attitudes, the dating attitudes? Stretching and risk-taking is extremely important. You're not going to be a successful single without it. Because unless you're willing to take a risk, put yourself out there, let somebody know you're interested, then you're not going to be the chooser. You're going to be stuck with people that choose you or with people that you know are available but aren't necessarily aligned with 100% of what you're looking for because you're too afraid to go after what it is you're really looking for. So the rule of three just builds up comfort levels so that when you go for it, then it's safe. You're not going to get arrested. You're not going to offend this person. You're just being friendly. You're just inquiring. If you were to ask on the very first contact, hey, you interested in getting together for coffee sometime? Then there would be more inclination to be offended. Like, well, who the hell are you? Why should I have coffee with you? You know, you're harassing me. But the third time around, there's more familiarity, there's more comfort, and if you ask and you get shot down, no biggie. You're still friends, you can still show your face in the bank, and it's no big deal. So that is the rule of three. You can use it anywhere, anytime, with anybody to meet anybody that you want to meet. And it can be as casual as, excuse me, do you have the time? You know, the first contact, you know, it can be anything. You can meet anybody that you want to meet anytime. And when you have that ability, you are free. You realize that you have a world of abundance out there. There are so many people that you could meet, and you can find somebody attractive and walk right up any old time and just schmooze because it's an appropriate social skill. There's nothing wrong with it, especially if you use the rule of three and you're not crossing any boundaries. You're not pressuring them to do anything. You're just chatting. But the secret is you're doing it in sequences of three interactions, so by the time the third time comes around, you feel like old friends. That is the rule of three.
And it's a great tactic. Thank you, David. Jack, how about telling us about some of the skills needed for Level 2 attraction venues?
Okay, Frankie, I'll do that. You know, in Level 2, your search is actually becoming very proactive. You're moving into areas now, settings that you've chosen, and you're in a situation where the other people that are there are doing the same thing you're doing. They're looking for a soulmate also. Better chance to make a connection. We're talking about single events, things like singles clubs, maybe singles bars, creating a personal ad, and my personal favorite, online dating. That's where I met the love of my life. The skills that Frankie mentioned are definitely required for all Level 2 venues, but there's a few more, and I want to present those also. The number one thing is being present. Be focused on the person that you're with. If you've ever been in a situation where you're talking to somebody and they're constantly looking over your shoulder, you know how disrespected you felt. You don't want to stand there and be scouting for someone else around the room to go on to next. Focus on the person that you're with. But also, work the room. When you disengage, as David said, move on. Remember what you're there for. You're at the event to meet potential date. So the thing is, you want to meet as many people as possible. Again, move outside the comfort zone that we spoke about of earlier and find yourself feeling safe by taking or talking with just one person at a time, taking a little bit of risk, get their contact information, move on. Disengage, move on. You can always use that rule of three to re-engage them later in the evening or the next time you're in the bank or wherever. Disengage gracefully. And what we mean by that is be polite, be respectable, be respectfully. You can be free to work the rest of the room and then come back and chat briefly with the individuals who really interest you. The same principle applies to internet dating. If you do not wish to continue a connection, break it off. Just be respectful about it. Maintain some mystery and some boundaries. Don't really reveal too much about yourself too soon. I don't think anyone wants to know your life story in 5 minutes or less. And with internet dating, don't succumb to the temptation to spend a lot of time sharing emails and intimate details of your life. Meet your online dates fairly quickly for a coffee before you lower the cyber boundaries. Really important. Be authentic. Be who you are. Just be you. Being authentic is like being a magnet for your soulmate. They're out there looking for you. They're looking for love. They want to be with you because of who you are, not in spite of it. And remember, be the chooser. Understand that not everyone is a match for you, and vice versa. Don't become attached to the outcome of these events. Don't become discouraged. Know that your partner needs to meet your requirements and be in alignment with your life vision and goals. Stay clear on that. Not everybody is going to meet the criteria that you've established, the requirements that you have. Singles venues are a lot of fun to go in with a positive attitude and a willingness to enjoy yourself. It's up to you. The choices you make about being present, outgoing, relaxed are all going to impact how you feel and, more important, how you are perceived.
Okay, so Level 3 venues are special interest settings, and this is like the bike club and the yoga class and the hiking club, and they provide an increased likelihood of finding somebody with similar interest and lifestyle. And it's not just about interest, because realize that if you're a member of a hiking club, other members, certainly they enjoy hiking, but chances are they're also health conscious, they enjoy the outdoors, they enjoy other fitness-related activities. So you would have an increased likelihood of making friends and finding people that are aligned with, you know, who you are and some of your values and your goals and your lifestyles. So these are settings that you should be hanging out in anyway, just to have an active lifestyle, because we're social beings and birds of a feather flock together. So we enjoy doing things with other people, sharing the interest that we have with other people that are like-minded and share those interests. So some of the skills that are helpful in Level 3 settings, in addition to all the others that I mentioned so far, are being reality-based, being grounded in reality. This is being in the real world, doing things you enjoy doing, meeting people. You're taking action and living their lives, living your life, they're living their lives. Your goal is not necessarily to find a partner. Your goal is to have a great life. to do things that are fun for you, to make friends and connect with people that enjoy doing what you do. This eliminates all the pressure. You can have fun, you can be confident, you can be yourself, and be just grounded into reality, grounded in the now. That you're in this hiking club, you're in this yoga class, and it has tremendous value just for what it is. It doesn't need to be anything more than that. You don't have to drop it just because your soulmate isn't there. And chances are, even if your soulmate isn't there, somebody there might know somebody good for you to meet. Remember, most people find their soulmate through somebody they know. Now, another skill that might come in handy is to be very clear about the difference between a natural evolution of a relationship and trying to force it. And when you are in a relationship with people, it's very helpful to just let them be who they are, let the relationship be what it is. Don't try to force things. And if we're attracted to somebody and we have fantasies about possibilities or the way we want it to be, there's a temptation to try to make it happen, to try to push it. And they might not have the same fantasies. They might not have the same agenda that you do. So it's important to hold yourself back a bit, you know, allow yourself to have those fantasies. We're going to have them anyway. Don't worry about that. But allow a relationship to be what it is. Allow it to evolve. Don't try to push and force. That's an important skill. And another important skill is to have patience, to be able to delay gratification. It's like there's no emergency here. You want to live your vision. You want to achieve your goals for your life. You want to be happy and fulfilled right now. And certainly you will find your soulmate because the law of attraction is helping you and you're showing up for it. So you can be patient. You know it'll happen. Time is on your side. So get to know people, relax, and connect with them based on your interest and your attractions. And, you know, don't be in a hurry. It's not an emergency. You don't need to push anything. You can be patient. Then you can have fun and you can be present. And lastly, a skill for level 3 settings, as well as other settings, is to trust yourself. Trust your intuition. Whether you're aware of it or not, you are scouting, sorting, and screening all the time, and you will be attracted to some people. Your intuition will tell you this is a green light or this is a red light or a yellow light, and you, of course, need to, you know, check out the intuitive hits that you get. You can't just trust your intuition. You need to check it out. But it is much better to trust yourself. If you're getting an uncomfortable feeling, trust that. If you are getting a feeling like, well, something's a little off here, it's not quite right, it's not quite a fit, well, trust that. Because if you hang out and you continue to test, what I've found is that typically we reinforce the initial intuitive hit that we have. We just get further evidence of it. So go ahead and trust your intuition. Don't beat a dead horse. Don't go down dead ends or hang out where it's not productive for you. But on the other hand, you might need to check out the information. You can't trust your intuition 100%. So use your heart, use your head. Definitely trust yourself and your intuition. So that's a bit about level 3 settings and the kind of skills that come in handy in level 3 settings. So, Jack, how about level 4?
You know, David, when you move into level 4, you're moving into those highly aligned communities, religious settings, social and spiritual organizations. Level 4 venues offer opportunities to meet the people that are most aligned with your values. And that's a major element of selecting a soulmate. These settings are the best venues for finding your life partner or to get the support you need to find your life partner. Again, create a network. In this level, you should be able to speak more freely and frankly about what moves you, your values, and your life purpose. There's a greater likelihood that the people you meet in level 4 venues will get you. They'll understand you. Some of the skills you need at level 4 are intimacy skills. First thing, there's a distinction that there's a difference between intimacy and being intimate. They're two different things. Being intimate refers to a sexual relationship. Intimacy is linked with feelings of closeness and safety between partners and friends. It's really a kind of a collaborative relationship. And for intimacy to be sustained and nourishing, it requires trust. It's got to be a transparent relationship, and you have to have rituals of connection. You've got to be in a good community, in a network. Recognize that we are social creatures. We thrive in positive communities, working with people that are like-minded, and by setting up a social network, we're taking action to increase our circle of friends and our acquaintances that can support us, which takes us to supportability. Allow others to support and help you achieve the relationship goals by being open to the offers and the suggestions of help. Recognize the commonalities. Look beyond the surface of superficial to see the common values and goals that you might share with others. Lastly, accepting differences and being non-judgmental. Understand what a successful love partnership requires, relationship balance, complementary differences. These things are positive, and certainly they're healthy.
Well, terrific. Thank you, David and Jack, for some very insightful information, and I hope it's been helpful to you.
I really want to acknowledge us, you know, Frankie, Jack, and myself, David. This program, we covered so much. We covered not only where to meet your soulmate, we covered the attitudes necessary to set yourself up for success, the key principles necessary to be successful. We covered the skills necessary to be successful. This has been an outstanding program. Thank you very much.
The rule of three, I have two questions about that. One is, how would you specifically use that in, say, going to something like a gallery opening? And my worry would be that if you leave somebody, they'll think that you're not interested in them. If you say, I have to go to the restroom, they would think, oh, she's not interested.
Well, you get around that by letting them know that, you know, you'll check in later. I'll see you in a bit. Just be clear that you're coming back. Just be clear that you enjoy talking with them and you will want to connect with them again. And you can do that 90% nonverbally by smiling, by shaking their hand, by touching their forearm. You know, touch is very powerful. You don't want to overdo it. But touch, you know, lets them know that, you know, you have made a connection and that you want to renew that connection. But definitely let them know you'll be back. You say, hey, I see somebody I know. I'm going to say hi to them. I'll catch you later.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a question about the level two relationship skills about disengaging graciously.
Yeah.
How does one actually do that?
I really enjoy talking with you. And by the way, I love your tie. And, you know, there's a few other people I'd like to meet here. But I'd definitely like to chat again sometime. Nice to meet you. Or something.
Well, if I want to see the person again, I don't think it's a problem. But if I don't want to.
Well, in my mind, part of disengaging gracefully is definitely paying a compliment. So you want to find something that you appreciate, that you can compliment this person about. Mm-hmm. And let them know that you've appreciated meeting them, that you've enjoyed meeting them. Pay them a compliment and let them know that it's time to go. And it can be as simple as that. I got to go. Nice to meet you. Bye. You know, not just like that, but basically with that kind of attitude. You know, there's no obligation for you to do anything more than that.
And David, let me add something to that. Don't leave them if you don't want to have a further connection with them. Don't leave them with the expectation that you want to or that you're going to come back.
Right.
Because that's like a guy saying, I'll give you a call in the morning.
Yeah.
So just, as David said, be very polite to say it was nice talking with you. I wish you luck in your search or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And goodbye.
Okay.
And that's a closure.
I wish you luck. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. The simpler and the shorter you keep it, the clearer it will be. And maybe if you have any anxiety about it, go ahead and script it ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Plan ahead of time how you know, just for you, for your particular personality and style and preference, plan how you will disengage with people, what kind of language you will use that feels good to you, that's comfortable for you, that's also short, sweet, and clear.
Okay, and how about if someone asks you out on a date? And you don't want to go.
Well, let me ask you, what would be a good response to that?
No, thank you.
Yeah. No, thanks. And
yeah,
what's
okay.
wrong with that?
Yeah, I guess that's okay. It's just, it's, you know, it's difficult.
I think people try to be too nice by thinking that they have to let someone down easily. And sometimes the kindest thing you can do is to speak plainly, politely, but plainly,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
just say, you know, you seem like a great guy, but I'm not interested, or, you know, I don't want to take you up on that offer. Thanks very much, and just turn and walk away.
Right. That's the yeah.
Again,
the best.
As David said, you know, the conversations that you want to have take place with people you like and people you think you have a connection with, as well as those that you don't, these are things you should practice beforehand so that it comes off of the tongue really easily and you feel comfortable. And the reason you feel comfortable is because you've practiced. You've stood in front of your mirror, and I know this sounds odd, but you've said those words 3 or 4 times.
Right.
And when you need them, they're there.
Yeah, you know, and something along the lines of, you know, thanks for asking, but I don't think we're a match. This is actually standard response on some of the matchmaking sites. You know how they have these standardized responses? And one of them is, well, thanks for contacting me, but I don't think we're a match.
That's well, good.
You can't argue with that. I mean, you know,
no.
I mean, you can try to argue with it, but you're being very clear. You're being very honest. You know, I don't think we're a match. Thank you for your interest. I'm flattered that you asked, but I don't think we're a match. So thanks for asking, but I don't think we're a match. So just plan the language that works for you. This is very, very, very important, and I really, really appreciate you bringing it up, because in order to get what you really want, you must be able to say no to what you don't want. You
right.
must be able to disengage. You must be able to turn people down that are interested in you, that you're not interested in, and to do so quickly, efficiently, respectfully, honestly, gently is very, very important, so I really appreciate it. Is that helpful?
Thank you. Yes, thank you very much.
Thanks for asking, but I don't think we're a match.
I have been living in the same place and dating here for about 20 years, and I've done a lot of these different things, and I'm feeling like maybe I need to go to a different geographic area.
I've heard that a lot.
Okay. Oh, yeah?
I dated all the available men in my area. Now I got to move.
Yeah, I mean, it has been 20 years, so that is
yeah.
a while. And I feel like, you know, I have a synagogue that I go to, and I've joined a couple of the social action committees, but I know everybody there, and they're mostly women, frankly, but there are usually a handful of men, but I know them, and I guess it's possible that someone there would introduce me to someone, but I kind of feel like I'm tapped out.
Well, do they know that you're looking? Have you been honest with them? Have you asked the people in your community to introduce you to people that they know? I guarantee you, they know people good for you to meet. And it's also quite common to be a bit shy about being honest about this.
You know, I just asked someone today if they knew anyone, and the response I got was, oh, you know this situation in New York. It's so hard to meet nice guys. And no, I don't know anybody.
Okay.
And
you realize that person, after that interaction, next time they have contact with their friend and who has a friend who has a friend, might keep you in mind. So realize that all is not lost, even if they couldn't think of anybody at the time. You want to keep in touch with them. You want to remind them. You want them to keep you in mind. Because if you put somebody on the spot, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, absolutely, put people on the spot. Hey, who do you know that would be good for me to meet? I mean, write down that question.
Okay.
Who do you know that would be good for me to meet?
Right.
And ask that question to all your friends, all your family, all the people in your community. So definitely put them on the spot, but realize that they're not necessarily going to think of a candidate right off the top of their head. But you do want them to keep you in mind, so definitely ask the question and then follow up the question. So please don't be shy about leaning on the people in your community. They want you to be happy. They care about you. However, They can't read your mind and know that you're available and looking and want to be introduced, and it doesn't necessarily occur to them. So you can wait for it to happen, or you can be a little proactive and nudge. If you're talking about a synagogue, I know you know what the word nudge means.
Right, right.
So don't be afraid to nudge.
Right, okay. Yeah, I mean, I guess I am somewhat shy about it, and especially if, like, you know, we're meeting to talk about environmental initiatives, I sort of feel like, oh, my, you know,
yeah.
My dating situation is not really of interest to them, or kind of comes out sounding trite or,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, well, Beth, please don't feel bad, because most singles, I'd say more than 90%, are reluctant to talk with their friends and family and the members of their community about being single and looking.
Yeah.
Most people are shy about it. It is the gold mine. It is the most likely activity that you could possibly do, find your soulmate. And most people are reluctant to do it because they're shy.
Right.
I can't make a strong case for it than that. It's just, if I were to just pick the one thing that were most likely to pay off for you, it would not be internet dating. It would be leaning on the people in your community. And not just once, either.
But in the meantime, well, I don't know if I want to...
Yes, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that, you know, Frankie mentioned that she met her husband in a level one venue.
Yeah.
And I think you might have used a level two venue, so...
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, I can see where you're going. In the meantime, work it. Work them all,
right.
Level one, two, three, and four. Definitely, you know, be a successful single, get out there, have fun with it. There's benefits to being single. You can have fun, you can meet lots of people, you can interact with people you wouldn't ordinarily interact with and do things you wouldn't ordinarily do if you were with a partner.
True.
So while you're single, have fun with it.
Yeah.
Because trust, you're not going to be single forever. And so as long as you're single, go for it.
Thank you.
And Frankie, you ready to wrap up?
Thank you, everyone. And Jack, thank you very much for participating tonight. We really appreciated your input.
Thanks for asking, and thanks for letting me be here.
Our pleasure. So thank you for joining us, everyone, and good night.
Great. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Night.
Bye.
Bye.